Today, we'll have my chat with AJ from Disney Food Blog. That's coming up on this episode 242 of WW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert from WDWPrepSchool.com. Thank you for being here for this episode. So here we are. It's weird times, right? So we're just trying to get through it and navigate the best we can because we are not going to have trip reports from listeners or my own trip reports, which are usually two per month, if you combine the two. I have decided to do something I haven't really done before, and that is interview people that I think are interesting and would like to just chat with. And so today, the first one of those is with AJ from Disney Food Blog, who I am sure you are familiar with. I talked to her recently, got to ask her some questions, and so you'll hear that in just a second. I also wanted to thank you all. Last time, I had some information about how you can help, and many of you did do that, and I appreciate that so, so much. I also wanted to follow up on the last podcast because it was from Jillian, who had some difficulty with a company, and that company replied to me the next day after the podcast went up, and I wanted to add their response to the previous episode. So in the show notes of the last episode, you will see that reply. However, she is still trying to get a resolution. I hope that there will be one soon, but as of the recording of this, there has not been, to the best of my knowledge. Speaking of show notes, I just want to make sure it's very clear what that means. Someone that I know brought it to my attention that she didn't know what that meant. And I asked in the Patreon Facebook group if people knew, and most people did, but some did not. So in case that is a question for any of you, podcast apps vary a lot, but usually there is a details link or you can swipe up in your podcast app to view the text that usually like has a description of the episode. In my case, I put links that are applicable there. If you're listening on the website, it's just the body of the essentially blog post or the article. And that's where the show notes live if you have never looked at that. So just wanted to clear that up in case you were wondering. I think that'll be it for the intro to this episode. Let's jump right into my chat with AJ. Welcome to the podcast, AJ.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I feel like your voice precedes you, and you may not need an introduction, but for those who don't know, can you explain a little bit about Disney Food Blog?
Sure. Disney Food Blog is a website. It's a YouTube channel, lots of social media channels, all about everything in Disney parks, resorts, cruise line, anything Disney related can go up there.
Yeah. So obviously the name has food in it. So that was like your original focus. Do you still view that as like your main focus, or do you view it more broadly?
I think it's still our main focus. We cover a lot of food. We do food reviews regularly. We try to get to every single restaurant in the parks and resorts at least once every 2 years. You know, there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of them in Disney World and Disneyland. So we do try to get to everyone and redo our review of it every couple of years so that people have a good understanding of what it's like now, because they do change really, really regularly with menus and servers and chefs changing out so often. So that's a main focus of ours, and making sure that people are able to choose the best places to dine for their vacations, because you spend a lot of money when you are eating out in Disney World.
Yes, you certainly can. And I am so thankful that you exist for the food space, because there's no way my, you know, little team over here could possibly tackle it. So we're just like, here's what we know about Food and Wine Festival. Now go read Disney Food Blog.
Yeah, Food and Wine has been, you know, kind of something that I've been real passionate about, obviously, for, you know, 10 years plus. And so from the very beginning of our website, we've covered food and wine in depth, gone and gotten every single item at every single booth for, you know, 10, I don't know how many years have I been around? 12 years. I don't even know how long anymore. So yeah, that is a major passion of ours as the festival is making sure we cover everything.
Well, and I mean, I guess that has worked in your favor because Disney keeps expanding them and making them available practically year round. So
it is, it's great. It's great that they're doing that. We love that they're expanding the festivals, and every time a new festival rolls around, they make it bigger and longer. And there's more food booths, but it is hard. It makes it harder to cover though. I will say that, because there's just so much to eat on that first day. And so it ends up being kind of an exhausting day for those of us who are covering it.
Sometimes the sheer logistics of your business blows my mind, because I don't know how you do keep up with all that kind of stuff. So like, I saw you at the Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway thing, and then I knew Flower and Garden Festival is going on too. So there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah.
So that just means that you have to have people on the ground in all different spaces.
Yeah, it was a crazy day when they opened Galaxy's Edge in Disney World and the Food and Wine Festival started on the same, I think it was the same day. It was August 31st that they did both of those. And I think that day was, that was like a 2 a.m. to 2 a.m. That was pretty much a 24-hour day for multiple people on our team. So by the end of the day, we were just, you know, we were still eating and drinking, and you know, it was crazy. We have some funny pictures from that day.
Well, I think that your organization's professionalism has raised the bar for the whole niche. So I appreciate that you do all that work.
Thank you very much.
We all benefit. So with the food focus, was that just like a personal passion of yours, or do you have a culinary background?
No, I have no culinary background. I cannot cook. All I can do is eat. So we decided to do the, Disney food blog. That happened because it was a personal passion of mine, that I loved to go to Disney World, that I planned my trips around food. And at that time in the Disney space, that was kind of taboo to sort of talk about planning your trip around food and talking in depth about the restaurants. Everybody who was in the space at that time was really focusing mostly on rides, attractions. So there was not a lot of niche content about food. And at that time also, it's important to remember, social media and mass as it is now did not exist. There was some Facebook, but I think Facebook was just coming out of the college only phase. Twitter had just started. Instagram didn't exist. So there was no sort of visually based social media outlet at that time. Very few people had smartphones. I think iPhones had just started coming out maybe a year or so earlier, but it certainly wasn't the norm for people to have them. And, you know, back then people were still using Blackberries primarily, non-photo taking Blackberries. And I think that my thinking was just, I want this to exist. I want this to be around. There was one little tiny website that was run by a husband and wife called WDW Food or something at the time. And when they went on their trips, they would take pictures of their food and then they'd post them. But they didn't go on that many trips. And I just kept refreshing their page, hoping that they'd gone back to Disney World. And so I was like, this needs to be here. I want to read it. And there have to be other people that want to read it, because people do spend so much money on food. Sometimes you spend more money on food than you do on your hotel in Disney World or your park tickets. So, you know, you should not waste that stuff. You should not waste that money on bad food. And also, since you're planning 6 months in advance for your food, you need to know what you're going to be eating. You need to know what to plan for. So anyway, that was my passion, to create that, that opportunity for people to plan well about about that huge expense that they were going to be laying out there. So definitely a passion. No culinary background at all, to answer your question.
You created it because you wanted it.
Yeah. I have learned a lot about the culinary side though. In the meantime, I've talked to a lot of chefs and I know some big words now, but.
Yeah. But it's been something you picked up along the way. So would it be fair then, with social media, especially Instagram, sort of on the rise, is there a natural tie between Disney Food Blog and the evolution of social media? Like the growth has kind of gone together?
I don't know that it was in any way causal. I think that, they both started at the same time. So I guess in that way they grew together. But I think it was definitely a benefit for us that people started to focus on taking food photos and they started to understand that was a thing that you could do and not be weird. Because when I was first going into restaurants, I had my big DSLR. I got a lot of weird looks. Nobody understood what I was doing. They thought I was super strange. And now you go in and everybody takes pictures of their food. It's just the norm. So it's very interesting to see the change over the past 10 years in, the mentality about documenting your meals.
Yeah, it doesn't even faze me to see someone taking a picture of their food. It's like, of course they want to document it.
Right.
That's just what happens. So you mentioned you've been around for, I think, 12 years now, right? What are some of the biggest Disney food changes you've noticed over the years?
I think some of the biggest change I've seen is that Disney is paying more attention to their food as a destination item. So when I first started going in, you never saw a lot of food promotion by Disney. Now remember, Disney Parks Blog didn't even exist back then. It wasn't around. So, the Disney PR space was completely different as well, but they did not promote their food that often. They did not kind of use it as a draw. Whereas now you see all of these cupcakes, you see all of these specialty limited time items you can only get in one place that's really hidden away that nobody ever goes to. And the reason why that's there is because they can promote that food item and people will come there. And they never did that before. That was never something that was in kind of their, their toolbox. Mm-hmm. So I see that a lot more, just drastic change in that. I do also see them paying a lot more attention to food as a, again, just as a destination. They know now that people they recognize that that certain things have iconic status to people, and I don't think they kind of knew that before. Around probably about 2 or 3 years after I started was when the Dole Whip and Turkey Leg sort of merchandise started to appear, and the Mickey Bar merchandise started to appear. And so they started to realize, oh, okay, some of this stuff is actually iconic. People come here for this and people will buy it because it gives them memories when they go home. So it's not just Splash Mountain, picture frames that people want. People also want something related to their favorite foods. So that was really interesting.
The days of turkey leg being the thing that you thought of when you thought of Disney Parks food feel so long ago now. There's so many other great things to choose from.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff. And I think that Disney's starting to realize that, with the power of marketing and, and social media, they can make anything a sensation.
Yeah. I think that is true. So I recently took a foodie focus trip with my foodie son. I've eaten at most restaurants at Disney World, but I have a new favorite, which is the tasting menu at Monster Paul.
Okay.
Probably one of the best meals I've ever had. And I wonder what your favorite meal or restaurant is.
That I get that question a lot, and it changes all the time because, I like to say the only consistent thing about Disney restaurants is that they're inconsistent. A restaurant can be great, can be my favorite thing in the world one year, and the next year there's a new chef, they've completely changed the menu, and it just falls flat. And so I tend to shy away from that question because it'll probably change the next time I go to Disney World, honestly. Right now, I'll give you kind of a sampling of what I have enjoyed recently. I do really like Morimoto Asia. Mm-hmm. I think they do a really good job with the variety on their menu and with kind of bringing that Asian cuisine to an American palate while still allowing it to keep its integrity. So I like Morimoto Asia a lot. I really enjoy the Victoria and Albert's Chef's Table, but that's mostly, it's not because of the food, unfortunately, it's mostly because of the experience that you can have at the chef's table, because when I'm at the the chef's table, and I've been there a couple of times. I've been lucky enough to be there a couple of times. I was invited by friends once, and I kind of paid for a group to go there another time. I love talking to the sous chefs in the kitchen. They're often young kids who are in there working, and they are so excited because this is their dream come true. Like, they are living their dream right now in the Victoria and Albert's kitchen. And they're so excited to answer your questions, to give you, you know, information about what they're working on and what they love and what's hard about it. And so usually when I eat there, you know, the couple of times I have, I'm just hanging over the railing, you know, talking to the chefs that are working there. So, you know, because I do appreciate good food, but I'm often, you know, I'm often more of a Monte Cristo kind of lover than a caviar lover. Mm-hmm. So I tend to enjoy the experience of talking to the chefs and getting their, you know, just absorbing their energy.
One of the ironies of the chef's table to me is that it's a very formal restaurant. There is a dress code, but it's the most informal, fancy meal I've ever had.
It's so fun. It's so fun in there. And there's so much energy that you don't get to see when you're in the regular dining room. Mm-hmm. And so for me, the regular dining room of Victoria and Albert's is boring and it kind of falls flat. And it makes me sad because I know so many of you have had such great, romantic, wonderful experiences there. But I'm just like, oh man, I'll pay the extra. I think that it's only an extra like $20. I don't even know. It's not even a huge upcharge to get into the chef's table. I'll have to check the upcharge, but I know for the last review I did, I kind of checked the difference in price. And to me, it was way worth it to get in there and feel that energy and see what they're doing and experience it.
Yeah, totally agree. And I do think too, when you start looking at the price tag of some of these things, you really have to think of it as an experience and not just the cost of the meal, because it totally is more than that. It's all about the experience.
Right.
Okay. So in my Patreon group, I asked for questions. I told them you were coming on and I got a couple good ones I wanted to go through with you. So Julie says there are so many good things to eat. She said there's so many good things to eat that when I'm in the parks, I forget where to go. I see them on Disney Food Blog. Can't wait to get it. And then I forget the advice as we toured. Is there any advice for how to remember or plan for this?
Yeah, I actually write a giant book every year that gives all of my recommendations. And the book itself actually comes with planning worksheets. So you can download the planning worksheets, put all, as you're reading through the book, it gives you instructions on how to plan, you know, how to put down your wish I could go here, and then how to narrow that down to the places that actually do make sense for you and your family to go to. So you can just bring, you know, either bring those planning worksheets with you or, you know, take pictures of them and have them on your phone. But, you know, as you're planning your trip in general, again, it's really good to sort of pinpoint those two or three places in each park, or there's two or three items in each park that you really want to experience and get. And make sure those are planned into your, you know, your touring day.
I will link to the DFB products in the show notes for people that are interested, because I own them and like them myself. Pam asks, are there any Disney recipes that you like to make at home?
No.
Just no.
I honestly do not cook it. I do not cook at home. When my kid was two and he would play at cooking, he would mime opening a microwave and putting something into it. Like, that for him is what cooking is. So I am the worst, you know, person when it comes to that. So no, I don't really make Disney recipes at home. I also don't have a lot of, you know, Disney decor in my house. So I'm kind of not your typical Disney fan in that way. But yeah, I don't think I've ever made a Disney recipe at home. I'm trying to think if I've, nope, I don't think so.
Yeah, listen, if it makes you feel any better, I also don't have Disney stuff in my house, and I do not have the Disney recipes. When my daughter was about that age, she would hear the microwave ding, and she'd go, lunchtime.
Lunchtime, right, exactly. I mean, I feel real bad about it. I'm real good at eating, but yeah, I mean, it's I have great people on the DFB team who are incredible foodies and have background in culinary and know all of that stuff, and they make the Disney recipes, and so they've got great insight, and so I've gotten really good about just anytime we're talking about, you know, how to make something, like, it just, it's all them. They can be in charge of that, because I just don't know.
We all have our specialties.
That's right. I'm good at writing and eating. I am not good at cooking.
That's right. Natalie wants to know if you always stay on property when you visit Disney World.
Yeah, I usually do stay on property because we also like to share reviews sort of hotels on our YouTube channel. So it is always beneficial for me to stay on property and be able to give that sort of insight, take that footage, get those photos, and be able to speak to it personally as far as recommendations go.
Yeah, I mean, that goes with the whole, you've really broadened, even with food as a focus, you do talk about other things. Yeah. So the hotels.
Oh, but also, just to clarify, this is, sorry to interrupt, but we always pay for it when we stay there. I think that's something a lot of people think, that Disney sort of pays for a lot of stuff for us, which they absolutely don't. We do that on purpose. We want to make sure that our reviews are unbiased. And if Disney pays for anything, it is the law that we have to disclose that. So we always try to pay for everything ourselves so that our reviews can be totally unbiased in the eyes of our followers and viewers.
Yes. And my podcast listeners would be familiar with that, because sometimes I have to disclose as well.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That is the law.
It is. We would do it anyway. I mean, we would do it. And even, you know, even before we knew it was the law, we would still do it anyway.
Yes, exactly. Sally asks, do you think the Instagrammability of snacks has diminished their overall quality?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think a lot of people think that Disney sometimes just churns out certain snacks just for the star power of them and doesn't spend a lot of time on their deliciousness. But I would have to say, you know, I can't really speak to that, because there's a lot of things I don't like on property that a lot of people love, right? Like, for me, Amaret's patisserie is kind of a waste of time, almost, for me personally, because I don't like super fancy desserts that to me don't have a lot of flavor or richness or impact. Like, I don't like the desserts they produce there. They're not my favorite. I don't like panna cotta kind of stuff. There's a lot of panna cotta going on in there. So that's just not my jam. That's not to say that that's a lower quality dessert. I think most people would agree it's an extremely high quality dessert. You know, I know several pastry chefs at Amaret's, and I know the quality of their work, but that's just not my jam. So that's a hard question to answer. I tend to love a cupcake with Mile High frosting, which a lot of people would be like, oh, there's nothing to this. It's just a stupid piece of cake with a bunch of frosting, and that's way too much frosting, and Disney's just trying to, you know, be Insta worthy. And it's like, for me, you know, I'll eat all that frosting, and then I'll eat, you know, the frosting off my friend's cupcake too. So it's a hard question to answer, because people have such different tastes and personal, personal feelings about what's good, what's bad, and what's just there for the photo.
That's right. It certainly does get me to try more things if it's cute.
Yeah. I mean, I think Disney's definitely made more Instagram worthy treats. And I think that definitely plays into why they're making the treats. I'm not comfortable saying that means the quality is bad necessarily. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. I think I agree with you on that one. I have one more question from Amy. She said, tell her the fans have spoken and they should podcast a few times a year like they used to.
We are working on potentially doing a podcast. So there, but you know, we've been working on it for like 2 years. It's one of those projects that keeps falling off when more important things come along. So we really would like to do that again. So thank you for liking the old podcast, and thank you for continuing to ask for it, because it brings it back up to the front burner for us.
Yes. And right now I think people are really loving podcasts because they have a lot more time to, digest them. Yeah. So,
although a lot of people aren't on their commutes anymore, and that's when they usually listen to their podcast. So I'm like, oh no, people are missing, their installments of their podcast.
That's right. It kind of depends how you normally listen, but it's certainly a good time to take it in if you can.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is all I have for now. I appreciate you taking time away from your schedule to talk to us.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. This was a blast. I always love answering these questions.
And I hope you enjoyed my discussion with AJ. She's somebody I have a lot of respect for, and this is obviously a busy time for a lot of us in this niche, and so I am super thankful to her for taking the time to chat. I hope you enjoyed it as well. I think that'll wrap up this episode of WW Prep to Go. For more information, please check the show notes, or you can go to the website, click on podcast at the top, and scroll down to episode 242. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.